Welcome to the Build Up on Balls.ie in association with Ladbrokes. Please bet responsibly. Visit dunlewy.net for further information.
You're very welcome to the Build Up on Balls.ie, our weekly podcast with Ladbrokes, where we used to look ahead to the sporting weekend and get you all hyped up for it. Unfortunately, there is no sporting weekend anymore, so we look for different and very interesting topics to talk about to get you through the sporting week. And we've actually got a brilliant one this week. I'm Mick McCarthy. You may have noticed this is not the dulcet cabin tones of Mark Farrelly. I'm normally in the other seat. In my seat today, though, is Donnie Mahoney. Donnie, you don't sound like me. I don't sound like Mark. It's all twisted and weird.
And your chairs are all in swords, and I'm in South Dublin somewhere, and I'm trying to get into your seat, but it's just all confusing. But we're making it work. We're making do.
I love across our platforms at the moment and the various different media that we do, your whereabouts have just been become South Dublin somewhere, and nobody wants to know anymore.
Don't want to give too much away.
On today's show, I'm going to have a chat with Kevin Doyle about the different managers he's had and what kind of goes into being a good manager. I did a bit of maths, and I think that Kevin has had 15 managers in his professional career. I'll go through them with him and see if I missed a couple. I probably have. But so he's got a lot of experience to hear about some of these guys, a lot of Ireland managers, a lot of club managers, guys in the League of Ireland, got a guy in America, two guys in America maybe. So there's a lot to talk to Kevin Doyle about, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But Donnie, the reason that we are talking to Kevin Doyle about managers is because with Ladbrokes, Balls.ie are launching our third bracket, I think, of the last month or so, where we're going to put up Ireland's greatest sporting manager, the greatest Irish sports manager, and we're going to have a little bit of a debate later on in this show to find out just who is that, or who's going to be in our short list of 16. Who's going to make the final 16? Because there's already, if we had an office, there have been ructions around the office. Unfortunately, they're just happening over Zoom and Slack at the moment, with people absolutely going crazy to make sure their guy is in or their girl is in. But you can't fit everybody into these things.
Yeah, our two previous brackets, the bracket to choose Ireland's greatest TV character and the best ever Ireland jersey, I think they were, you know, going into them, there was clear favorites and there was no great shocks really by the time the dust had settled. But when we tried to compile a list of, you know, Ireland's greatest manager of all time, I do think there is a lot of different opinions and different approaches on who actually is the best of all of our great managers across all different sporting codes. And to be honest, we're having a hard time deciding on the 16 people who'll be on that final list, who we'll open the voting to. So I need a bit of help from you, Mick, to decide just who goes in.
Yeah, we're going to be doing a little bit of clarifying later in the show and trying to kind of whittle it down to 16. I think it's a sign of how great our manager culture is in this country as a sporting nation. We have a great manager culture that, like, we really are. I think we're going to be actually genuinely upset if at the end of this podcast we whittle it down to 16 and have to leave out three or four, five or six even, according to my long list that I'm looking at here. Anyway, that I'll talk to you about in a while, that we're going to have to leave them on the cutting room floor. It's going to be incredibly sad, but sure. Look, we'll get to all that. I'll get Kevin's thought and who he have in as well. And we'll talk to him about lots more. But I think it's time to do that right now. Right, delighted to say I've got Kevin Doyle on the line with us, as always, here on the build-up. But Kevin, we're talking about managers today. We're doing this manager bracket, Ireland's greatest sports manager, in association with Ladbrokes. Does anyone jump out at you first? We're going to talk about your own kind of dealings with managers, but, like, I mean, you're wearing a Wexford top there, so I'm sure it's the first person into your head, or Paul Galvin, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I haven't had too much experience of Gaelic managers, so I keep my mouth shut on that one. not since I was 16, I think, was my last Gaelic football match. Some good ones underage. Football managers, are we speaking Ireland international managers or just in general?
I think just in general, yeah. I mean, it's kind of, we're going to talk later on in the show about kind of what the criteria is for the bracket and what we'll get into the last 16. But it's basically Irish people who are managers, be that, like, you know, Chris Hughton obviously never managed Ireland, yeah, but he is an Irish manager. And then there's obviously some great League of Ireland guys over the years that would never have reached international level. But and then there's obviously going to be Jack and Mick and all, yeah, these boys as well, you know?
Yeah. From my experience, like, I had Mick, obviously, for a lot of years. I really liked Mick as a person. As a manager, he was very, very good. He was very honest, I would say. And that's what you look like in a player, you know, or like in a manager. As a player, from my experience, their traits, you know, sometimes might not agree with their training or their tactics or whatever. But if you think they're being honest with you, you know, if they don't pick you, you're never like delighted, obviously. But if they don't pick you and speak to you and, you know, take you aside and tell you why they might be picking you, whatever, it goes a long way. I've had managers who don't do that. They just ignore, yeah, you. If you're not the team, you might as well be a piece of shit on their shoe. They have no interest in you. And I don't think it didn't get the best out of me. It works for managers, but from everyone's different. And as a player, I you know, didn't like being treated like that. You want to be treated as a decent human being, whether you're playing, whether your form is good or bad. You want to be treated the same. I think I felt Mick did that. You know, if I wasn't playing well, he still spoke to me. He still chatted to me about my family or whatever it might be, you know. Whereas I've had other managers, I won't name them, but they, you know, they only care about the first 11, and the first 11 is their best friend, and they're jokey and happy and brilliant. But anyone who's not, you know, I don't want to talk to you. So I have a soft spot for Mick. You know, Ireland managers, I really like Giovanni Trapattoni. I know he's not Irish and he's sort of not included in this, but from, you know, I was only looking the other day because I was talking about him to someone else in the interview about CV, and from a, like, most successful manager, he must be, of anyone who's managed an Irish team in any sport or anything you play, he must be the one with the best record, player and coach of any manager Ireland have ever managed to get on board. And we had the best of him in the first year or two of his in charge. I don't think he was in the best of health for his later years in charge of Ireland, which probably wasn't public at the time. But I think in the first year or two, we got the best out of him, and I really enjoyed working for him, playing for him.
What was the difference there? Was there a kind of a? Was it just that he wasn't as kind of available, or as maybe as kind of present?
I think he lost his authority. He I'm not sure exact health what happened. To him, I heard that he'd had maybe a slight stroke, and his speech wasn't quite the same. He didn't have the same just authority that you have, presence. Yeah. He wasn't noticing things that he was in his first year or two as Iron Man. You know, in his first year or two, he was a stickler for little details and how he dressed and just different things and how everyone acted at dinner. And just whereas it seemed stuff was let slide in his last years, and he didn't seem to notice some of the things that might have been going on behind him. He didn't seem to have as good of control or authority over the group, whereas in his first year or two, he was serious man. And then all the players liked him, but they didn't, you know, no one got away with much under him in the first year or two. But look at his CV, he was unbelievable. Coach, yeah, player, he had everything. And I don't like to say manager, a good manager, because they're good players or not. There's plenty of managers who, you know, weren't good players and vice versa. But he was able to, in the training ground, I don't know if I said this to you before, but he'd be able to say, he'd lose it on we'd be practicing set pieces and someone had scored a goal in the set piece when we were meant to be defending or whatever, and he'd lose it and he'd say, this is what happened to me in the Champions League final in whatever year or whatever, I lost the Champions League because of this and I won a Champions League because of this. So he was able to really relate it to experiences that he had in massive games, and that made it sink in with me anyway, listening to him come out with stuff like that. You know, it wasn't bragging or boasting. It was just trying to get across to you how, you know, in the biggest games, these things matter. So, I liked working under him. He really left Ireland under a bit of a dark cloud, and people, you know, had grown tired of how we played and different things. But I think in the first year or two, you know, finishing up with that France playoff game was one of the best we've played. And in that first year or two, he really had us going, man.
Definitely, yeah. And you see, I think it was his birthday, it was obviously St. Patrick's Day, and I thought there was a lot of kind of goodwill towards him. You know, I think sometimes absence make the heart grow fonder and stuff, but like, people do, I think, appreciate that he was a very nice and good man, if nothing else, you know. But it's interesting to hear you talk about the tactical shootness of him. And I don't want to dwell on Trap too long, but I think it is a positive conversation. One thing for me that always jumped out, and I'd be interested to hear what you think, is that the respect that the players always seem to have for him. I remember Kevin Kilbane, he was gone from the Irish team, but obviously he played under him for a couple of years, and he used to always call him Mr. Trapattoni. in just yeah. general chats, like in interviews, you know, where he wouldn't say that about, you know, Steve Staunton, he might call him Stan or something. There's no disrespect to him, but it's just there was a level of respect there. But I always thought when I went to press conferences, it would seem like he used to kind of talk down the abilities of the players, and he'd be just explaining his tactics. I was just wondering, did that ever seep through to the players, and would it annoy you or would it motivate you?
It didn't annoy me. I didn't see too much. I know what you mean. I remember there was a few times where he would have said, you know, I'm basically getting the best out of what I have. I can't do any better at this point.
Yeah.
There. But because I didn't feel that from him, I suppose, at the training ground or on the pitch. And it should have annoyed me because I hated people doing stuff like that. But it just didn't. I don't know. Maybe in one-on-one, he was just very, to me anyway, he was always, was it you? I said this, he was like my granddad sort of thing. You know, he'd always be getting on to me because my style of play, I used to run a lot and train hard. I'd be running all the time. And I used to always be drawn and tired, like, after games. And he'd always tell me to calm, relax. You need to save your energy, you know. If I was walking around the hotel in my flip-flops, which you would be a lot as a footballer, I'd be strolling around in your gear, in your flip-flops and shorts, and he'd be seeing that I wasn't wearing socks. He'd be like, my mother, you know, you need to be wearing socks. You'd get a cold. You know, so he was looking. He was genuine, and he was looking out for... I always felt he was looking out for me. You know, so I had a good feel and a good, he always had a sparkle in his eye, and I just like the man in general. And he, you know, said he picked me, I suppose. A lot of the time he picked me, plenty, you know, a few times he didn't pick me as well, but I still liked them. And I wouldn't have liked that side of it, but I didn't at the time. I don't remember getting frustrated by it, but you saying it now, and you're right, he did come out on a few plays. I should have been annoyed by it because that would have really annoyed me. From different managers would talk, like Jose Mourinho does it now at Tottenham. Tottenham player, I'd be just fuming with him all the time. He's never good enough. Same with Man United manager, never good enough.
One of the bad sides of Matt, like, just talking about what's a good manager, what's a bad manager. I'm going to get into your, like, club career as well, but like, there is one of those sides is like this feeling sometimes that the manager might be, and this isn't to Trapp's point, but like that they might be in it for themselves or their reputation and their job, and I always feel like that can't do a great job for players when it's like you're not all in this together. Is that something that you would have...
I don't remember having... All the managers I've had, I'm trying to think with Ireland, and at club level, they were all, you know, I don't think... No one stands out as being like that, you know.
Nobody stands out on the list.
Different managers in fairly big clubs, it's very unusual that they would get that level without... You know, having the ability to improve players and improve teams. We're going back, Jose Mourinho did it as a manager. He improved teams. At the moment, he seems to be the opposite way. But to get to the level he was, he improved like the likes of Porto, obviously. And most managers are good managers. They don't get along too far in their, don't be, you know, managing bigger clubs in England or whatever country without being good at their job and not blaming everyone else. So you see it when they're under pressure, I suppose. There's a lot of pressure in... A lot of focus, a lot of attention on the Ireland manager and on England. You see some managers buckle a bit and it becomes everyone else's fault. But the main most I've had said that likes of Trapattoni, Mick McCarthy go through them. You know, at club level, Pat Dolan in Ireland was a fantastic one. We're talking about Irish managers managing England. For a young player, you know, I don't know if some of the older players used to... didn't see eye to eye with him, but as a young player my age, you know, he really taught me what was the sacrifices and what was needed to do if you wanted to be have a long career and be a professional at a high level. So he was fantastic in my opinion for young players, and won leagues in the League of Ireland, was very successful League of Ireland manager. So
sure.
Going through them. Steve Coppell, again, and they were all different. All these managers were different managers. Every one of them had their own personality. There's no right or wrong way. Steve Coppell wouldn't do any coaching on the pitch, would be more of a, you know, have his coaches who's coaching, he'd walk around and oversee everything. And Mick McCarthy was more of a man, would like to do the coaching on the pitch, would get involved more that side. Ireland managers, Trapattoni wanted to be on the pitch doing the coaching. Steve Staunton would do a good bit of the coaching. Trying to think, Martin O'Neill, not so much, would stand back and sort of be roving around the outside and let his coaches coach more. So they're all different. I know John O'Shea telling me that Alex Ferguson never took a coaching session, and the one time every few years that he might jump in to take one, all the players and down tools and just be like, oh, no way, like, take the piss out of him totally, because he just wasn't a coach. He was a manager and he picked the team and he was very good at getting the best out of players. So, but not coaching tactics on the training pitch. I had Harry Redknapp for 4 or 5 months, and he was the same. He was not a coach. You know, didn't do any of the coaching. He'd tell his coaches what to do, and he'd just walk around and watch. So, all different. All have their own ways of doing it. All successful in their own ways.
What would, like, say to Harry or O'Neill or Steve Coppell, I think is a really good one for you in terms of, like, kind of your development, the development of your career over in England. Like, you know, what's he getting out of you if he's not coaching you how to play football? It's just, it's fascinating, like, to me.
Yeah, I know. You know, I don't know if what did he get in me? I felt a belief from him. He wouldn't talk a whole lot to me, but he'd have quiet words. I was a young player just trying to feel my way in and you know, settle in a new country and, you know, gain confidence. And he was really good. He would be telling me, I was a striker, and he'd be just telling me, don't worry about giving the ball away. Because a lot of managers will be screaming from the touchlines every time you give the ball away. And you'll be like, you know, your nerve will go as a player and everything will hit you, bounce everywhere, and you'll just lose the head because all you hear is the manager screaming, hold it up as a striker, hold the ball, don't give it away. And you end up just doing really safe and doing everything simple, whereas he would be the opposite of me. He would never say a word to me about giving the ball away. He'd just be always telling me, take people on, have shots on goal, enjoy it. I want to see you run the people, Kevin. I want to be excited on the touchline. They were the sort of little words he'd be having with me over the months, over the weeks, you know. Nothing real tactical, you know. You center forward, Kevin, I want you to run it. If defenders hate you running at them, run at them. You know, anyone, you know, my mother can control the ball and lay it back to a midfielder, you know, that sort of stuff. And he was right for me as a young player. There was no going out into the pitch thinking of tactics and thinking, shit, what do I do? It was, I'm a center forward, stay up the pitch, take people on, enjoy the game, try score goals. The only tactics I had to know were where to be at set pieces, corners, throw-ins, that side of things, know where I was on the pitch. But as in general play, you were a centre forward and there was no, you know, Reading weren't a team who were lumping up to me, hoping for me to hold on to it and keep people in the game. I was younger and faster and exciting and taking people on, played a different style of game maybe then, younger as I did later on in my career. But that to me, young players need that. For me anyway, I needed that.
Yeah.
You know, I suppose I've been well coached over the years at Cork City and St. Pat's. Tactically, I knew, you know, the style of play at Reading was a very simple 4-4-2, an organised 4-4-2. And I'd grown up playing it. I didn't need a whole lot of tactical coaching, I suppose. But confidence is massive. In every sport, every industry, if you're confident, you think you can take on the world. And I felt he had confidence in me. And it's, you know, if you really believe that, it's a big thing. I probably played my best in my career under him at the time. And that was his way with players. And I enjoyed it. It was perfect timing for me.
Yeah, definitely. I think probably someone who might be even a little bit underrated by, I suppose not underrated, but not thought about enough, I suppose, in terms of the record he had as a manager from the moment he retired all the way to kind of through that Reading run and stuff like that. He had an unbelievable record, really.
Yeah, he retired not long after I left Reading. He managed for another year or two. He went to Bristol and he left. From what I heard, he left after a couple of months. He took over Bristol after Reading and they had a fairly wealthy owner and they were going for trying to get promoted and they signed David James seemingly behind his back. So he left and that's the last time he managed, as far as I'm aware. He was the LMA, the League Managers Association, while I was there 2 years in a row. So the whole Premier League Championship, whatever, all of them voted for him 2 years in a row, which is a, you know, unbelievable achievement, managing Reading and getting that award twice. So yeah, he was, you know, he was top class at Crystal Palace in years gone by before my time. Yeah. But at Reading, it must have been something similar. You got Crystal Palace to cup final when they were a small club. And they did well in the league. And I felt that at Reading. But he didn't feel like a normal... To me, he wasn't a real football man. He seemed to have a life outside of football. Football wasn't... Not that it wasn't... Maybe it was, maybe I'm wrong. But in my opinion, it wasn't the be-all and end-all. You know... He never seemed to get too overexcited, he just seemed to go along, win, lose, or draw, the same persona. And maybe that's why it wasn't to be. I think he had an economics degree from college. I thought maybe, you know, he was easy for him to, or you know, he didn't need it. For a lot of people, it seems like a drug coaching. He maybe felt he'd done everything he wanted to do. Happy to step aside.
And maybe that's a benefit for him as well, then, when you know that you can step away at any point. You don't have to be there. Can I ask, this is a complete tangent, and just before we wrap up, I just want to stay on that. That's interesting to me that his end at Reading and you, and I don't think we've ever talked about it before, when you guys got relegated after the second season, I think there was like a fans like write-in or whatever to make sure that Steve didn't resign. And I don't know, I think the players might have been involved in that as well. I'm not sure that he almost felt honour-bound to go, and he stayed on. And you stayed on as well. And I know you had offers from the Premier League. I don't know whether they ever came to you directly or whether they came through the club. But was there a sense, and I know you lost out in the playoffs, and it must have been a kind of a heartbreak, and then you went to Wolves after that, but was there a sense that you guys were going to kick back in? And sometimes when you get promoted that second time, that's it. That's you establishing yourself.
Yeah,
then,
you know, we were.
Easier.
Yeah. You should. I mean, it's unusual to get relegated. The fans be, you know, queuing up for a manager to stay and want to stay. That was the case at Reading. We should have been. You're right. We were, you know, I nearly left that summer. I was very close to going, and Reading changed their mind and wanted me to stay in the end, and I was happy. I was only there a couple of years, and I was enjoyed life there, no problem staying. So I stayed another year, and we were top of the table at Christmas, flying it in the Championship, everything rosy, really, you know, bouncing back great, and we went on a really bad run after Christmas, and just, you know, ended up in the playoffs, you know, from looking like odds on to get promoted. And I do feel the club had learned their lesson. I felt from the relegation, we hadn't strengthened. We'd relied too much on the same players, and all got in a bit of a comfort zone. And I do feel if we'd have got back up then, it would have really pushed on to being more established, like you say. Most of us stayed. A couple left, I felt debt of gratitude to Steve Coppell to stay. Yeah. As well. I felt like, you know, I owed him something. And, he said, I think he wanted to walk away that summer, I think, after the relegation, but he was convinced to stay. And the minute we got beaten in the playoffs semi-final, I think, by Burnley, he walked away after the game and said, I've done everything I can, and I needed a break. So that was the sort of end of that group. Then we all moved here, there and everywhere. A little look back on that now, since you brought it up, we let that one slip. That was,
I know.
We were very good that season up till end of January, and we just faded. But that's the Championship, and you know, we obviously weren't good enough in the long run. It was nice though. Like, Reading was that sort of club. You know, even when he left, we didn't get, there was no, you know, no, there would never been massive negativity. Fantastic club for, like, we got relegated from the Premier League, and they come out and cheering the manager on and wanting him to stay. Obviously, we've been very successful in the previous years and helped that. But I always felt a very loyal fan base and patient at the time to support us all. It was a big blow at the time to leave. For me, leave a bit of a downer. But anyway, it'll be a
that's
great
football, I suppose. Not as if you didn't give them some great days as well over the kind of 4 years that you were there, but don't want to leave it on a negative. But so I'll just go back to the managers very, very briefly. The bracket will be up. We'll have a few of these guys in it, obviously, because Irish. But as my notes here, you have 15 managers as professional. I could be wrong about that. There could be a few takeovers, right? I think you've mentioned nearly all of them at this stage.
Can you list them out?
Except for, I think I can, but you have to tell me if I'm wrong here, right? So we have Pat Dolan at Pats and Cork. Yeah. Damien Richardson before you left Cork.
Yes, I did, won
the league.
I really enjoyed Damien. I've been there for 10 or 12 games with him, but
Steve Coppell. Then you have Mick at Wolves, and then Wolves went on the run of managers. So I have here anyway is old TC, Stanley Solbakken, Dean Saunders for a week or two, Kenny Jackett then. Loan spells with Harry at QPR, and I think Warnock at Palace, is that right?
Warnock, and you've missed one. I had Alan Pardew for like 2 weeks.
Oh, Pardew. I saw that he came in. I didn't have the dates.
For Alan Pardew,
Right, so 16. And then in Colorado, you had Pablo Mastroni. Is that the only manager you had there?
And I had caretaker Steve Cook.
Oh, Steve Cook, yeah. I saw him. I didn't realise they crossed over. There we go. We'll say 17 then. I knew I'd miss a few. And then at Ireland, you had Stan Trapp and Martin O'Neill and Don Gibbons as your under 21 manager.
And Brian Kerr, I was in his last few squads.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I didn't play under him. So
but you were in the squad. Yeah, he was your manager, though. Yeah, okay. We'll bump it up to 18 then. That's impressive. That's impressive. And there's some good names in there, to be honest, as well. But if he pops up in the bracket, you'll be voting for Mick out of personal loyalty anyway.
Yeah, I think so. In the thing, it's Irish managers. You know, there's not too many of those Irish, is there?
Yeah. Well, Irish managers are in Irish sport, I think. So actually, when you were saying about Trapp not being involved, I actually said, I must ask Donnie that in the next segment.
Right.
He's in charge of things. And I think Trapp should be a contender to at least get into the last 16.
He bought into Ireland when he was here. Like he was dragged up and down the country by John Delaney to every sort of yoke that was going on as well. So he saw everything. He was down in Kerry and Killarney and Tralee.
Yeah,
so
every team announcement was somewhere new, yeah. Well, Kevin, great stuff. Thanks a million for joining us, and we'll chat to you next week.
No worries, mate. Good one, thanks.
Now, all this week on Balls.ie, we will be running a bracket to find Ireland's greatest sports manager. Not an easy task. We're going to be doing an association with Ladbrokes, and the man on the line here now, Donny Mahoney, is going to be the man who's going to be running things. But you know, we're going to do it as a group, Donny. And the first thing we have to do is decide who are the final 16 that go into the bracket, and that the public will then vote on. And this has not been an easy task so far. We have been fighting like cats and dogs over Zoom, over Slack. Unfortunately, luckily, I suppose we're not all in the same building at the moment. So we can't actually have a discussion and an argument and possibly a physical fight about this. But it's not an easy task. We heard from Kevin there. I suppose throwing another spanner in the works when I was talking to him, when he's talking about like great stories about Giovanni Trapattoni, by the way. But also, like, does someone like Trapp count? Does Joe Schmidt count? Does Graeme Shaw? Do managers who aren't from Ireland that have managed in Ireland count? And do managers who are Irish but possibly haven't done much within the country, such as like Chris Hughton, do they count? Is this managers in Irish sport in general?
Yeah, that's a good question. And to me, the way I'm kind of coming at this is anybody in the Irish sporting, the Irish sporting family tree who's gone on to some kind of management is welcome. We want everybody. So I'll tell you who isn't in it. Somebody on Twitter suggested Bill Walsh. He used to coach the San Francisco 49ers. He's just an Irish-American. He's not.
We might have Billy Walsh, but we won't have Bill Walsh.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, all right, well, let's get to it then. Like, what are we looking at here? So we've kind of talked about the criteria. It's kind of anyone. For me, there's a sort of a sense, I said it at the start of the show, there's a sense that there is a great culture of manager in Irish sport, I think. And I think that comes from having great managers as well, you know, but also great personalities. And it's kind of across the sports. We have it in kind of like our four main team sports, plus the individuals as well, has some great characters. And it's kind of made this list impossible. I do kind of feel like if you were doing this in English sport, as more successful they've been and as more numerous they'd be, and you can go across more sports, I think you'd have an easier job getting down to 16. Mm. I think when you throw in GA into the mix, it just makes things really difficult.
It makes it complicated. Can I just want to add a couple of layers of criteria as well? So people who've trained or coached animals aren't going to be considered, which basically leaves out Ireland's great horse trainers who are, you know, incredible at what they do. But we're looking at managers or coaches of team or individual
people.
Sports. So, exactly, people, human beings. Sports managers not going to be considered either.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think they are often like included in like the Phillips Sports Manager, the Munter Manager of the Year, and it's fine. Like, I understand. I just think that it is a different.
Mm.
It is a different thing. Like, you know, if you know Willie Mullins gets into this, it's a completely different conversation. And I think we're talking about being people motivators as well as technical trainers. And as Kevin was talking about, there's so many you can be a great manager without ever taking a training session or actually coaching anybody, or you can be the full-on coach. And I think you throw animal work into that, it makes things a lot more confusing. So that's a very good clarification that I hadn't even thought of.
And some of these guys have coached a lot of animals, but we're talking about two-legged creatures here. That are, you know, that's their... So let me... You talked about the cult of the manager, Mick. I think we would all agree that there's, I would say, seven or eight spots of people who have to be on this list, who, if we didn't include them, they would be... this list would be discredited as a thing. So I might just run through them first, okay?
Yeah.
So you mentioned, you know, foreign-born managers who worked in Ireland. Jack Charlton would be the first name on any kind of list.
Sorry, I hadn't even thought. Like, as in, I know Jack's on this list, but it's like he is so honorary Irishman, as they say, that you don't even consider that as a question. Like, yeah.
I know.
Sorry, of course. Yeah. So, Jack Charlton's English.
But I mean, his time in Ireland, over his time, he became, I mean, one of the most famous Irish people of the 80s and 90s. So Jack has to be on there. I think you have to have, from the Gaelic football tree, you have to have Heffo, Kevin Heffernan, change the game. You have to have Mick O'Dwyer. These guys are iconic in the sport, and it's kind of impossible to imagine the sport without the two of them, at least the modern game as it is. Eamon Ryan, Cork Ladies manager, 10 All-Irelands during his run. Manager there, completely, you know, the most decorated manager in ladies football, so he has to be on the list. Hurling, you have to have Brian Cody. I mean, what he's achieved with Kilkenny over the last whatever 20 years has been will never be matched again. And I think Billy Walsh in boxing, what he managed to achieve as the director of the high performance unit with Ireland 2012 Olympics. I mean, just incredible, an incredible coach and a motivator of men and women has to be on it.
And 2008 as well. And when you think about, like, we spoke to Jason on the show just a couple of weeks ago about Andy Lee's Olympics in 2004. I think maybe we had one or none in Sydney, and then Andy was the only fighter in Athens. And when you think then, with Billy Walsh at the helm, suddenly you have, I think we had 6-7 boxers over in Beijing. We won 4 medals. And then in 2012, obviously you bring in Katie into that, and you bring in Michael Conlon and everything like that. And the success was just continued. And what he's doing in America now as well, like, you know, and like Kevin Doyle was talking to us about that on the same show, how well thought of and how successful he is over there. And how much they just want to hold on to him and want to get him more and more involved. Like, Billy Walsh is a no-brainer for this list, actually.
Absolutely. I didn't mention any rugby coaches.
I think
we'll probably settle on 3 in within the final 16. The one, I think, it's trying to, like, choose between Joe Schmidt and Declan Kidney as to who's the first rugby coach on there, I think, is a difficult debate. And what I'm going to suggest maybe is that we just put them both in. Because both of their contributions in different ways, in different decades, you know, were transformative to how sport in Ireland, or the sport of rugby in Ireland, really was experienced by fans. And what they both achieved in different eras really was incredible.
Yeah, so 2 Grand Slam winners, both European Cup winners as well with their province. You have to look at kind of the transformation as well that they both brought about. Like, Schmidt was taking over a European champion in Leinster, but, you know, I think it was a very different team that and very different style and methods that won over what Michael Checa had done. And, you know, Declan brought Munster from nothing, really, you know, like as an entity even. No, never mind as an actual rugby team. So I think both have to be on, but I think once we're getting down to... No, I would say both are in there, actually. Yeah, no, okay. I definitely don't want to be negative. I'm just like, anytime when I'm arguing against anybody during this show, I think it's like almost as a proviso, I'm going to put it in there. Like, it's based on very, very high levels and wanting people to get in rather than wanting people out, if you know what I mean. But I would argue that both of them. But does that bring us up to 10 then?
I have that at 9.
Okay, 9. So we've got 7 spots.
Yeah.
And just to stay on rugby then, I think your contenders there are probably Mick Doyle from the 1980s, Triple Crown teams and everything else, like more than that, kind of an almost father of Irish rugby in that time. And Eddie O'Sullivan, I think, can't be overlooked either then. Like, as in, if you think about what Eddie did when he took over from Gatland in 2000, I think, and kind of just... I was looking at five nation, six nation stats, and Ireland have the most wooden spoons of any team, but haven't got one since 1998. And I think that a lot of the work that Warren Gatland did, and then definitely Eddie O'Sullivan, has propelled us into that, regardless of whether we're at our best or not. We're not in that category anymore. We're always going to be one of the contenders. And that shouldn't be forgotten about either, you know?
No, absolutely. I think Eddie his achievements really have been really overlooked, I think, in a way. And it's impossible to imagine what Kidney or Schmidt would have achieved with Ireland without sort of that foundation that he would have laid from across the decade, last decade. I think that works for me. I mean, I'm just gonna, there's just some, I think there's some iconic characters who you have to sort of really consider strongly, who might not have been, they might not be the decorated, they might not have the mantelpiece that has as many medals or trophies as Brian Cody, but kind of define what we think of as like as an Irish sports manager is a great one, So Sean Boylan, for instance, the cult of the manager, I think the conversation around that, the cult of the Irish manager, sort of starts with him in a way. I think he really sort of changed the game, and that sort of the mischievous kind of streak that he has. I think that's kind of what we want in a great manager,
Yeah, and it's, the GEA is so plentiful in that regard. Like, so if you add in Gerlach Nann into that bracket, and that's not just like Clare bias talking, I think people will see that as a unique character who brought, as Boylan kind of brought Mead almost from the wilderness to winning four All-Irelands. Lough Nann brought Clare from the wilderness, as did, you could say Liam Griffin in Wexford. I don't know if he's going to make this list, but again, that kind of, that character-based manager. Jim McGuinness, exactly. I think, needs to be kind of discussed in that bracket as well, for what he did in Donegal and the kind of like tactical and stylistic revolution that he kind of undertook there. So those kind of lads, Cyril Farrell,
sure,
I think are all worthy of discussion. And then you have other kind of GA guys as well then, which might be more methodical, but, Jim Gavin's name hasn't come up yet either,
Yeah, you've got your Jim Gavins and your Mickey Harts. Gavin, I think just on sheer achievement, it's hard to rule him out. You kind of have to have him just based on what, no one's done the five in a row, so how could you... He just seems like he belongs there. He's earned his place there.
Yeah.
But I agree with you that it's the guys who would have brought counties or teams from with no tradition or to the promised land. I think those are the guys that you want to sort of make the argument for. What could Jim McGuinness have done with Dublin or something like that?
It's really interesting to think about. Or do these guys, are they suited to that unique mentality that might be within their own county? And I think that there's definitely an element with that for Lough Nann, was that I remember, spent the kind of day with him a couple of years ago, and all the sense was always just kind of like a deep understanding of Clare hurling and Clare people that transcends a knowledge of hurling, which is absolutely there as well, but it was more important. And I wonder, is that something that like Jim McGuinness definitely had in Donegal as well, like while he also would have been successful elsewhere, I'm sure. Can I give you my Gaelic football, kind of like the people in my head, and then we can talk about where they are on the list, and maybe you can tell me if I'm missing anybody as well then, all right?
Go on.
So we've got Mick Owen Heffernan, right? I think you have to at least discuss Dr. Eamon O'Sullivan and Kerry, the man who basically invented Gaelic football coaching. And maybe this isn't the right platform for him in this regard, in terms of like actual kind of like more pure managers that we're talking about. But definitely it's, I just worthy of discussion. I think then you also have to take in Gavin. I think you have to take in McGuinness. You have to take in Boylan, Mickey Hart. I think Eugene McGee is worthy of discussion. Won All Ireland with Offaly, obviously, and was just like a great coach all the way through his life and his career. And Billy Morgan in Cork as well, then would definitely jump out for me. And then there's other guys as well that are probably the next step down, almost like someone like, John O'Mahony or someone like that, who was like, or Paddy, even like Jack O'Connor. All amazing careers, but probably not. I would probably stop at Billy Morgan again as that kind of like a guy who transcended his job a little bit, in terms of what he does and is still winning things to this day,
Yeah.
Anyone else there for you?
No, I think you've covered a lot of them. I think Morgan sort of he's that kind of borderline. He's got the achievements and he's got the madness, and I think those are kind of the two two kind of things there. Just while we're on the subject of GAA, you'd mentioned we talked hurling a bit, so Loughnane and Griffin, you mentioned, I presume. I mean, I think there's a case, Liam, I think you could make a strong case for Liam Sheedy, but it's unfortunately a very competitive field.
Okay, here's my case for Liam Sheedy, and I'm going to make another one then for Cyril Farrell, which I think I probably feel a tiny bit stronger about, right? Liam Sheedy took over Tipperary in 2009, and they hadn't done much in a long time at that stage. He got them to like a league final. They suddenly kind of started believing in themselves, went on, should have beaten Kilkenny in that final, lost it 4 in a row, went and won it for the 5 in a row, or to stop the 5 in a row, won the All Ireland. So in 2 years, he transformed them into the strongest team in the country. He left. They fell back down again. They did win All Ireland in between in 2016 under Michael Ryan, but had been knocked out in the group stages in Munster in 2018. Sheedy comes back in. They win the All-Ireland again, And I think for just strike rate and for being able to get the most out of guys who aren't doing it when he's not there, I think Sheedy is, to be able to transform a team and make them believe in themselves as much as he seems to be able to do without me knowing exactly what he does. Yeah. I think that's my case for him. And I think it's a strong case, to be honest,
But absolutely.
But
and to come back, to go away and come back, I think there's something to be said for that kind of, to move on, watch the game evolve and come back. But and
there isn't a great track record on it, is there?
No. And what I kind of like about Sheedy as well is as a coach, he's a great delegator, he would the likes of Eamon O'Shea and even his own brother is involved in the backroom team this year. He knows how to be a great coach while bringing in the advice of others and not being threatened by them. All great coaches have great assistants,
Yeah, and they're not afraid to use them or to elevate them either. There was no secret. If you were listening to some of the media in 2010, including me, I'm not distancing myself from it or anything like that. You're always trying to be smart in terms of how you're analysing something. And it was as if Eamon O'Shea was the reason that Tip were any good, and it was his tactical, it was his tactical genius, I suppose, that led Tip to the type of play they were doing, but it was all done under Sheedy. And I think you can tell then when that happens, when you see somebody on their own without that man, that Brian Clough to the Peter Taylor.
Exactly.
Is so important. It kind of goes back to what Kevin was talking about as well earlier about sometimes it's just that word in the ear or something like that for the bit of confidence that a real manager is able to do. It's just that charismatic leadership, I suppose. Cyril Farrell, speaking of charismatic leadership, in 1980, Galway hadn't won All Ireland since 1918, something like that. A long time. They weren't a hurling county almost even. And all of a sudden then you win in 80. They're around as one of the top teams. Cyril comes back, wins two in a row in 87, 88. They are controversially denied the three in a row due to messing in 1989.
Yep.
And hangs around and it's just has been involved in coaching basically since he was in his early 20s, all the way through his life.
Absolutely.
And was one of the great innovators and one of the great kind of like hurling men that you kind of do wonder, would we have a county? Would we have one of the premier hurling counties as that if Sir O'Farrell didn't exist? And I think that actually pumps him into top 16 consideration for me anyway.
Yeah, and even, I mean, he's still acting as a sort of assistant to Davy Fitz during the Fitzgibbon Cup.
Yes,
these days, you know. So, like, he's never stopped coaching, and it's his love for the game is brilliant. And, like, you know, he's been doing it his whole life. So, like, I would agree. I think, you know, recency bias affects a lot of this stuff, and really what Farrell did, you know, bringing Galway from nowhere, deserves a lot of respect and credit.
Right, so that's four real hurling contenders, we would say, and that's, again, no disrespect to like someone like Liam Griffin, but again, it's probably the next tier, you know, with someone like him. Father Michael O'Brien in Cork is probably another one. Donal O'Grady probably wasn't around long enough to kind of get in the thing, even though he could have been as good a manager, etc., etc. Right, so we'll probably talk about four real hurling contenders out in Lucknan, Sheedy, Farrell, and obviously Cody is already in. To go along with the football lads we mentioned, we've four names in the rugby bracket. What about football then, before we get to kind of other sports? So we've got Jack in, Mick not automatically in, but I feel like you're going to put him in.
It's funny. I think Mick McCarthy, as someone, we're talking in a way about, like, you know, quite local things in a way. We're talking about GEA. It's like the stage of Croke Park is so intense that we get to see characters in a sort of a new light. But, like, achieving on a global sort of level deserves its own kind of credit. And while, you know, I think McCarthy, it's hard, while he's been given a lot of opportunity with Ireland over the years, like, it's hard to sort of, you have to give him a kind of, you have to give him his due, I think, as a coach. You know, if you look at what Ireland did in 2002, they reached the World Cup round of 16. There was a playoff against Belgium in 98. There was a playoff against Turkey. You know, we never played amazing football under Mick, but
better football than we did under Jack, though. It was like, it's funny. I think there's a little bit of revisionist history there in terms of, like, same old Ireland kicked the ball away. Ireland actually played some decent possession football. We had the players, though, as well.
Sure.
I'm a little bit torn because here, like, is part of a manager, like, talking to Kevin, like, I don't want to put, like, Kevin would have voted for Mick, but, like, for me, it was like, how do you, is part of going to the World Cup not getting in the fight with your best player and sending them home? Like, we're not reliving Saipan. I don't care about the ins and outs of it. But what I mean is, like, is part of his grading as a manager that not happening? You know what I mean? If we were to give him an A for the World Cup, surely Roy Keane doesn't go home because of a blazing row in a team room. Because regardless of, you know, the ins and outs of exactly what happened, we do know there's some things that aren't disputed. And of those things that aren't disputed, Mick could have done things differently, you know?
Sure.
So I think that has to be taken into account. He also qualified, like, he qualified for one out of three tournaments, but lost the first two games of the fourth tournament before he sacked. And it was a team with Roy Keane, Robbie Keane, Damien Duff, Shea Given, you know, other really, really good players.
Yeah.
At the same time, he did bring most of them through, you know, and kind of made them into international footballers. I think he's probably worthy of his place in the list. And I think given what he's done at club level as well, which is like just be a really solid, good football manager for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, he's earned his keep in English, you know, in the Premier League and the Championship, you know, for at least 15, 16 years. There's not many people in Irish football or who've come through Irish football who can claim that. And I mean, I'd love, you know, like Brian Kerr, he's one of these guys who I think I really would love to see on this list. But like, how do you put his achievements underage with Ireland against, say, what Mick has achieved as a manager in the both with Ireland and in the Premier League? I think Kerr has the affections of Irish supporters much more than Mick ever would have. But I just, you know, it's sort of a hard, it's a very difficult sort of decision. Yeah.
Got two tournaments, right? Brian Kerr did. He was behind the eight ball in Euro 2004 because Mick lost the first two games. He then went into World Cup 2006 qualifiers in a group that basically all the four top teams all drew every match against each other, except for Ireland lost in Lansdowne Road to a brilliant Thierry Henry goal for France, right? And okay, maybe we shouldn't be losing at home. Absolutely, I don't discredit that, but you know, both games against Israel, we should have won. They got a last-second equaliser, and they had that 2-2 draw that was goalkeeper messing, and you know, always been 2-0 up, and Robbie Keane going off and it all. Like, I mean, there's an element of, right, a good manager stops that from happening, but at the same time, there's bad, bad luck involved in that. And we could have automatically qualified out of that group, and we would have been at the World Cup. And I think you're looking at Brian Kerr very, very differently then. And he's working against a very different era, I think, of professional footballer and everything like that, where I feel like he had to win over the kind of like English football first brigade.
Sure.
Which I don't think probably exists anymore. And I hope Stephen Kenny doesn't have to go through that. But then you take into account what he did at the under 16, under 18 level, plus the way, like, I mean, he was a leader, like an absolute leader at League of Ireland level for a long, long time. I'm not necessarily saying against Mick, I'm just making the case for Brian Kerr to be on that list as an Irish sporting manager. Like, he actually does have an incredible record all the way through, you know?
Let me make the case also for Martin O'Neill.
One more thing. Sorry, I want to talk about O'Neill for sure. But just one thing about Kerr that has to be taken into account, regardless of what you do when you get to that top level, which I was just saying he's unlucky, to come from an Irish football background and never to be outside of that, never to like work in England or in the Premier League or whatever, and rise to the position of Ireland football manager in itself is an achievement that's worth considering, you know, and that is worthy of praise. Like, yeah.
Absolutely.
Martin O'Neill, go on. And then he went on and managed the Faroe Islands.
That's true. They beat Estonia, I think.
He's a great fan of them.
Martin O'Neill, I think, just being a recency bias earlier, like, I think most people are kind of down on O'Neill and the O'Neill era. There's a bitter taste in everyone's mouth after how it all ended. But, I mean, like, you have to say his Ireland achievements, Euro 2016 quarterfinals, plus being a, you know, one of the best managers in England for a 5 or 6 year period. I think it's agreed, like, different era for the Premiership, but like, he was in that.
No, if you're taking into account what he did with Leicester, what he did with Celtic, and what he did with Villa, before you even talk about qualifying Ireland for a tournament, I think Martin O'Neill's the main football name on this list.
Yeah,
you know, and it's just like, Did we see him up too close almost for a finish, or did, you know, was there a sense of arrogance or a sense of distancing himself from the performances and the players that just kind of like did turn us off him? But was that always there then? When I look back, I don't know. But the Martin O'Neill that was the Celtic manager in particular, when that was their probably Celtic's best ever team, sorry to the Lisbon Lions, I hope you're not listening. But the team that, like, you know, the Henrik Larsson team that should have won the UEFA Cup and lost to Jose Mourinho's Porto. Like, he was a great, great manager. Like, I mean, absolutely, there was a reason he was being talked up as, you know, the guy for all Premier League teams to go and get, you know, or even to be England manager randomly. They always seem to want Martin O'Neill to be England manager, even though he's from Derry. You know, so... And that's why the English press even like refused to actually look at the evidence in front of them when they were analysing what was going on with Ireland over the last few years. You know, they were just like so convinced that this guy's a good manager, he couldn't possibly be doing a bad job. I don't think if he makes it, he'll win. He'll get past the first round, given how it ended with Ireland, though.
No, I agree. But I mean, I'm just thinking of him.
No,
I think back of those days where he was wearing his sort of his track.
Danny, well, we appear to have lost Danny.
Goals being scored from Larson and stuff. I mean, it really brilliant in his day for sure. I think history will come around on his time as Ireland manager as well. I mean, like those famous days at Cardiff and Lille. Like, yeah. I don't know how many of those we're going to have. Really.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it went south. So I really would be making a strong. I think I would make a case for O'Neill over Mick, to be honest. Which
As an Irish manager in general, and you add in like everything he did. I don't know if history will come around. It might, and if it does, it might be wrong. Because we did have good results, and let's face it, but it there was the bad days were so bad because of a general kind of obstinance that I never really understood where it came from, and I really feel like it massively negatively impacted us, and I never really understood where it came from, you know, or why he needed to be like that, but I think people will happily forget that and go by the fact that we got to the Euros in 2014, you know.
Let's leave it there. I think we could have another conversation someday about how, like, a term limit on Ireland manager.
Possibly, manager. Yeah. Okay, so that's four names, right? Yeah. Four very good candidates. You're looking then next is probably like Chris Hughton, but it's kind of for what he's done outside of Ireland. So while he does meet the criteria, again, it doesn't. Do we really care how somebody did as Brighton manager?
Yeah.
You know, so I think maybe Chris Hughton isn't going to make it. And then like Michael O'Neill, I think, you know, but again, it's kind of Northern Ireland, but, you know. And then Stephen Kenny, I think, like, I think hopefully when we're doing this in 2 years, Stephen Kenny is on the list, but he's probably not going to make it at this stage. But just take his League of Ireland work alone and forget about any of the Ireland stuff. Stephen Kenny definitely deserves to be part of the conversation.
I think it'd be wrong of us if we didn't even at least mention Billy Bingham as a sort of candidate here. Like, what he did with the North was pretty impressive over the years. I think it's probably just too competitive. Also, Frank O'Farrell, I mean, like, unfortunately, we weren't around when he was managing, but how many Irishmen have managed Iran? Not too many.
Or Manchester United. And the Venn diagram of the two of them is very, very bad.
There are not too many.
Yeah, John Giles, like, you know, own hand. Like, if these lads had a little bit of different look, and it's funny because, you know, the sad passing of Michael Robinson yesterday kind of did show up a lot of kind of other videos and stuff like that. And some of the football Ireland were playing in those in those early Owen Hand days, the late John Giles days, was unbelievable. And like absolutely robbed, dodgy penalties all over the place for other teams. And, you know, we could have qualified for loads of tournaments before Jack turned up. And Owen Hand and Giles are making this list straight away, you know. And Giles especially had a good run, like a really good job with West Brom in particular in England, you know, and definitely could be part of this. But again, I think we're probably, like we were talking about with football, like we were talking about with hurling and Gaelic rugby, there's probably a second level there, and that's probably on it. So if we've got four strong names for the football, we've got, did we say four for the hurling, three in rugby? No, four in rugby because we're including Mick Doyle. That leaves us with... that's 12, and then we had way more than four in Gaelic football, didn't we? We had five or six, I think, and Billy Walsh. And then we haven't even talked about other sports. Like, the Irish hockey team made a World Cup final last year, you know, or in 2018, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'd be a remiss not to include Graeme Shaw as part of that. Like, you know, I suppose the question always with these things is how much you've influence the great achievement as well, you know. But at this stage, like, I mean, the players seemed like devastated when Shaw decided to leave, like, so I think that always tells you a lot. And then there's loads of other sports as well, you know. So
can I make the case for Dominic Casey in rowing?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
I mean, when people think of rowing, they think of the O'Donovan brothers. But I think what Casey, from what we can tell and what we've read and all these things, like, he really does seem like the driving force behind so much of the success that Irish rowing has experienced over the last 3 or 4 years. But also, you know, I mean, if you've ever driven through Skibbereen and you've seen that rowing club, this is not like a facility that matches what the Germans or the Norwegians have, but he kind of seems to single-handedly have turned this into one of the best places to coach a sport in the world. I mean, we were talking about, you know, sport managing on a global level. This guy was the World Rowing Coach of the Year in 2018.
Yeah.
So how many, you know, like, how many of our coaches can we really say that about, who, like, are not only, you know, the best in Ireland or, you know, these countries and, you know, these islands, but actually the world's best coach. I mean, he's one of the few coaches we can say who's done that. He's, you know, he's guided the O'Donovan brothers and is really just he seems to be the sort of center of everything great that Irish rowing has sort of accomplished in the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I find that very hard to argue with, really, because if you just look at so much success coming out of a country, you're like, grand, that can happen. But so much success coming out from one small area, that doesn't happen by accident. That happens because of somebody. You know, and it's not always just one person, and it might be a system, but that comes from, you know, a motivator, somebody who's able to get the best people to give their best and to be, you know, to be as committed as you need to be to go and win Olympic and world medals. And that would suggest to me, without knowing a huge amount about the sport, that comes down to a manager or a coach, like, you know. And I think if it was in another sport, that's the genius we'd be talking about. So I think Dominic Casey is definitely a huge contender. I'd probably have him in, to be honest, you know.
Yeah.
So where does that leave us, Danny? Is there anybody else on the long list?
I think
we're obviously missing out on so many, but we've gone into so much detail on how hard it is to get into this at this stage, you know.
I might just give Anne Downey a shout out, just because she's done what very few female managers have done, which is cross over into the world of into men's coaching. She's currently coaching the Ballyragget intermediate team. She also won All Ireland there with Kilkenny Camogie team. But I think she's probably outside the conversation here for what we're discussing. I think it's just so competitive. I've got a list here.
Saur Antia as well is probably just, again, somebody that's just, I want to mention, but he's probably not getting into the 16, but deserves to be in the conversation.
I also like the idea of Andy Lee being on like the 2032 version of this list.
Stephen Kenny, number one seed for that. Andy Lee, coach of corner man for 7 world champion boxers, number 2 seed. Why not?
But anyway,
Quigley, our 4-weight world champion.
Yeah. So we decided on 9 sort of people that have to go in. I would find it hard to leave Loch Nan out, just for, I know you have a soft spot for him. I just think he just has to be there. Maybe his Galway time diminishes him a bit, but I just think, bringing Clare to what they are, I really think there's something special, you know, transcendent almost.
I agree. I think that Loch Nan as a character alone, I think, needs to be in here. But also just like for the achievement, even if it was in a short burst of time, really, you know, but it was pretty unique. You know, I would argue that Cyril gets in there as well. I'd probably have him even slightly ahead of Liam Sheedy if we are to have to start making these cuts. I would have Eddie in. I think Mick Doyle probably loses out when you go to the rugby side of things. And that's, you know, unfortunate, but probably true. Because that leaves you with 3 rugby coaches.
It's hard to leave Boyle out, I think.
It's very hard to leave Sean Boyle out. I think you could probably leave Billy Morgan out. I think you can probably leave, as we mentioned earlier, Eamon O'Sullivan probably isn't going to get the recognition that he deserves and probably isn't the kind of pure manager we're talking about here. And I think you can leave, dare I say, Jim McGuinness, Donnie.
Yeah.
Like, he got Donegal to two All-Ireland finals, won one of them. Like, I'm changing my mind again now.
He's the only man to beat Dublin in the championship match. And
do you know, like,
16. Well,
I was thinking the star shone too briefly.
Yeah,
I think Eugene McGee probably. I think Eugene McGee, I'd love to have seen, like, if Eugene McGee had another chance after that Offaly team got old with another strong county, he nearly probably could have done it again, you know?
Just on McGuinness, like, he attempted what no other coach has attempted. I mean, he hasn't so really succeeded so much at it, but I mean, this crossing sports, I mean, this is like Jordan going to play baseball. Like, not many people have tried this, and I think to do that is work with Celtic. He worked in China, like he's
in America,
like, if you know, I think his ambition and his sort of drive to be sort of, you know, not just be like a Gaelic football manager is something you have to consider as well. Like, it really adds as a sort of a manager. Like, he can, not many of these guys, like, how would Sean Boylan do managing Dundalk? I don't really know, you know.
The fact that Mickey Hart wins three All-Irelands with a county that's never won it before, and that's unbelievable. I think that gets him on the list anyway. I think what cements his place is a longevity and a continued reinvention and relevance. He's kind of got a bit of, he's kind of got a bit of Bill Belichick or Greg Popovich to him. Like, you know, he's been in charge of so many different teams and iterations of that Tyrone team at this stage. And for them to reach the All-Ireland last year, or in 2018, I mean, and be, like, you know, the second best team in the country to the best team of all time, I think is worthy of saying that, like, you know, it wasn't just a special group of players that he had with the Canavans and the O'Neills and the McGuigans and all these boys, you know, the Doers, Sean Cavanaghs. Yep. It was more than that. It was a really, really strong manager bringing them all together. So that's Mickey Hart in for me, I would say, with Boylan.
Yeah.
I think McGuinness is still on the fence because of how high the standard is here. And I think Jim Gavin is in. Did we already agree on that? That's five football guys now. Like.
Yeah. So let me just take a step. I think the case for Dominic Casey, the case for Dominic Casey is very strong. And I just think in the interest of, you know, broadening this conversation as much as we can, I think he's sort of deprived of the media oxygen that a lot of the GA managers would receive. And I kind of think it's hard to leave a World Coach of the Year off the list. So I'm going to throw him in.
Okay, I agree. What about Shaw?
Shaw, to me...
World Cup final,
I like it. I just wish there was more... It's the longevity that I'm looking for here.
Okay.
So, but
we got to a World Cup final in a sport that we're not traditionally that competitive in. Like, we don't qualify for Olympics on a regular basis. Or now, this team have gone on to qualify for the Olympics since without him, and I think that's actually a mark against them.
Absolutely, and I think how much I'm definitely not a master tactician when it comes to hockey talk. I do think that Aisha McFerrin was a huge, massive part in driving Ireland forward. And I don't know how much of that is coached, but she was very brilliant in those penalty shootouts. it sounds like we're not trying to diminish these guys.
No, this is the highest possible standard conversation. Yeah. Okay.
So
the only non-main sport people that are going in are Billy Walsh and Dominic Casey.
That's right.
Okay, so they're in.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Gaelic football is overrepresented. But I think it has the best coaching characters at the same time, so I understand why it is.
So Mikko Heffo and Eamon Ryan.
Yeah.
We're in. We're saying Jim Gavin.
We're saying
Sean Boylan.
And we're saying Mickey Hart. So that's six, basically.
Yeah.
So I think.
I think Jim misses out.
Yeah, I think between Boylan, Hart, and Gavin, someone has to go. I don't think you can leave Boylan out, so it becomes Mickey Hart versus Gavin. I really would
I can't. I don't think you can leave any of them out. I think actually, if you're leaving any of them out, it's Sean Boylan. I don't. No, it isn't though. It isn't. It's probably Mick. I think that's up for the public to decide. I think they all deserve. They deserve to reach the public vote stage.
Do you think what?
I think it's football, like soccer guys that are really. Did we say yes to Mick?
No, I put Martin O'Neill in for Mick.
All right, okay. So Mick's out.
Mick booted.
And Martin O'Neill and Brian Kerr, no.
No. Like,
okay.
And somehow we got to 16.
Cody Lucknan.
Okay. Cody Lucknan.
And Farrell. Kid
Farrell, yeah. Oh, and God, then, so Farrell isn't in this list either. So okay. It's Cody Lucknan or the hurling guys. So there's two hurling guys. There's three rugby guys. Schmidt and Kidney, I think, have to be in. Any, you know, very, like, achieved a lot. So then you've got the five Gaelic football, six Gaelic football.
Guys. I've got 16 here. Yeah. Who am I missing? Or who am I missing that I've got? That I've got two people that you say aren't in it.
Okay, I've got
Billy Walsh and Dominic Casey. I've got Big Jack and Martin O'Neill.
Yeah.
I've got Cody Lucknan and Cyril Farrell. I've got Heffo Miko, Eamon Ryan, Jim Gavin, Sean Boyle, and Mickey Hart. I've got Declan Kidney, Eddie O'Sullivan, Joe Schmidt. That's 16.
Yeah. I remember somebody twice. I have Schmidt down twice. Okay, so.
Okay.
So.
That's 16, and I'm happy with it, but I'm going to have to dispute our own findings here because football is massively underrepresented.
I know, yeah.
We've got Martin O'Neill, who wasn't even in our original top four, has jumped in to the second place, and we've left both Mick McCarthy and Brian Kerr out. Gaelic football managers.
I think we need to drop a football manager and throw it and get Kerr or McCarthy in. And to me, the person who jumps out, unfortunately, this is probably kind of anti-Catholic bias, but it's like Mickey Hart. I know he's achieved a lot over the years and has been around for so long, and obviously the Tyrone teams in their day were amazing. But I wonder, put against Gavin and Boylan, maybe it's just he doesn't have the charismatic side of Boylan.
I agree. I think there's definitely a charisma element to that that is probably unfair given his style of management. You know, it's not it could work against you as a manager, but it hasn't worked against him, if you know what I mean. Can I suggest a coward's way out?
Go on.
Can I suggest two play-in matches in the same way as they do in the NCAA tournaments in March Madness, where we have 18 with two first-round matches to get into the tournament proper.
And who do you propose in those?
So I would propose we put in Mick McCarthy, Brian Kerr as our extra two people, and we put them up against Mickey Hart and Cyril Farrell.
McCarthy and Brian Kerr.
As in, they're the four. They're 16 to 18. They're 14. 15 to 18. Yeah.
Okay.
This is what happens, folks, when you decide to have a debate that is doesn't have an answer live on air, so that you can get to. Normally, you might cheat this and already have the answer that you're trying to get to, but no, we're too authentic for you, and that's why you're listening to a lot of waffle here.
I think we could try that. I think some decisions are too difficult for mortals to make, and at the end of the day, I think we just need to open it up to the public and see what people think.
Okay, so we're going with a top 18.
Seems like it.
Is that acceptable?
Well,
do we have to get our graphics people on board for this?
I think we need to look at some logistics, but I think that's the best solution we can come up with at the moment. And I'm still very interested. Like, really, we're having an interesting argument here. I do think not many of these guys will make it past the first round, unfortunately.
Half of them will, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, I think actually that's a fair point. I was about to say to you, the reason I'm so passionate about making sure this list is right. There's a few people that I just want to make sure they're represented, okay? I don't think that Dominic Casey is going to get past the first round. Should he? Probably. You know, like, I mean, we've made a case for him to be in this. We believe that case. But you have to say, public vote, it's going to skew towards the bigger sports, etc. So I want people to be represented. But then also, I'm like, there's guys who's scraping in here who could win it.
Yeah.
Because there is a, like we knew Father Ted was going to win the TV bracket.
Yeah.
Is Jack Charlton definitely going to win this? Like, he might, but
yeah.
I don't know either, you know?
You could.
When it comes down to it, like, Mick O'Dwyer could win.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely going to be a throw. Cody. There's going to be a Cody contingency, but or Cody contingent. But I wonder, though, also, everybody seems kind of vulnerable in the second round. So I'm very interested to see how this plays out. I don't.
Okay.
It'll be interesting. It'll tell us a lot about both the Balls Eddie readership and the general mood of the country.
In coronavirus lockdown. Who is your favorite sporting manager in this particular moment in time? Look, we can't wait for it. We'll be back next week on Wednesday to have another half an hour conversation to discuss the seeding for this. So this isn't actually going to happen. I'm only joking. This will all be out there probably by the end of this week, Donny, I would imagine. Yeah, probably tomorrow. Thursday, yeah. We might even have our play-in games later Wednesday. You'll probably listen to all this and have already voted for Cyril Farrell, perhaps. But if not, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope we illuminated is probably the wrong word, but I hope we shed some light on some of these decisions anyway, and you can kind of almost take it inside a production meeting here for one of these things, and I hope you enjoyed it. We will be back next week. I won't be. Mark will be. Donnie will be. And we'll have more from the Ladbrokes ambassadors, Kevin Doyle, Stephen Ferris, Jason Quigley, and we'll have more on this kind of stuff as well. And I think the fact that Mark's back, our GEA All-Ireland quiz will be back as well. I should have mentioned that we didn't have that on today's show. You know, we got beaten in the All-Ireland final last week, Donny, so I needed a week off, to be honest, to recover from that. The heartbreak was just too much, you know. But hopefully you guys can take it on another step further next week.
We'll see what we can do. We'll try our best.
Okay, well, listen, if you don't already follow us, please do subscribe to the podcast. You can get us on iTunes, on Spotify, all different podcast apps. Just search balls.ie or search The Build Up, and you will be able to find us there. Please leave us a rating as well. It really does help, and it is always much appreciated. But until next week, as Mark would say, find yourself.